What is up, bosses? Before we kick off this episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor this week, Indeed.com. When you're hiring for your business, there's usually a choice. Hire fast or hire well. But what if you want to do both? Then you need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do it all with Indeed. Indeed has a powerful suite of hiring tools, which I'm going to tell you all about during the break in the show. But if you want to get started right now, you just got to head over to Indeed.com/iLab. Indeed knows when you're growing your own business, you have to make every dollar count. That's why with Indeed, you only pay for quality applications that match your must-have job requirements. So visit Indeed.com/iLab to start hiring now. That's Indeed.com/iLab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, let's kick off this episode of Invest Like a Boss.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
What's up, bosses? This is Johnny, and welcome to episode 253 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I'm with my good homie, Derek Spazzing Out Sparts. Welcome to the show.
I kind of am today, honestly, but it's a little too early still. I got a cup of coffee coming in and then probably working on that. How are you, Johnny? I don't even know where you're at. I didn't recognize the location.
Yeah, I'm in Athens, Greece, which is kind of my go-to spot if I just need some sun and a place to just chill out and do some editing and do some work for a few weeks.
I was going to say, I think you were there a few months ago, but you didn't exactly rave about it.
Yeah, I don't love Athens. It's just convenient. There's always like a $50 flight here from anywhere in Europe. The weather is good. It's cheap. I like the food, you know, internet is usually okay. Like it's definitely not my top favorite, but it's kind of like a cheap oasis in the EU.
Very nice. That's a good call. I'm going to a cheaper oasis from the EU too, I guess. So my plan was to go to Oktoberfest in Munich, and then I saw the prices and decided maybe we'll try it next year. It was like $1,500 for a flight for like coach. And then, you know, just like accommodations were like five times the price. And it was just like, I don't know. And then, and I've already been to Munich before, so I didn't go out during Oktoberfest, but I really wanted to. So I'm going to what is supposedly California's best Oktoberfest this weekend.
Oh, where is this?
This is in Big Bear Lake. Do you know where that is? It's about 2 hours out of LA. Yeah.
Near Tahoe. It's
Really.
Okay. Well, it's the Tahoe of LA. Let's say that.
Yeah. Essentially, since we have like no lake. So this is the closest thing we have.
Okay.
But I'm excited. And it's going to be today. It's like this weird hot October day. It was like 93 degrees. And I'm going to Big Bear where it's going to be like 34. So it's going to be a little bit of a difference.
Yeah. It's going to be freezing. Well, the funny thing is, first, I found out Oktoberfest isn't in October. It's in September.
Right.
Yeah. So it's by the time people even listen to this, it's way over. But I was actually in Austria, Upper Austria, very close to Munich, during actual Oktoberfest. I could have went. My friend asked me if I wanted to take a train there with him just for the day to hang out and drink and then come back. And I was like, I'm not in the mood. Like, just, you know, the idea of going there just to get, you know, hammered a bunch of beers.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just not my thing. Like, I was like, you know what? I'll have a beer at like a bar in Austria, but that's about it.
Yeah. I've been wanting to go forever. And I can't remember any other year where I had a lot of friends like going to Oktoberfest, but it must have been like the pent up COVID thing or something. Cause this is the first one they've had in 3 years. And I saw every weekend I would see like someone else that I knew that was going. I'm like, wait, you're going? And I'm still not going. So yeah. I think I got a little bit of FOMO. So I'm going to try to do the California version of it and see how that goes.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. It'll probably still be pretty expensive out there. How much is your hotel or your Airbnb?
It's about 200, but that's for a Saturday night. So it's not horrible.
You know, to me, that sounds terrible. Like anything over $100 a night sounds ridiculous to me for a hotel.
Well, that's kind of the purpose of this episode is you're kind of the master at living frugally. And we're going to touch on hotels and Airbnbs on this episode. And I think you'll be surprised at how much one in proper Los Angeles actually costs, Johnny.
Oh, no. Well, I just got done listening to Sam's episode with you on what would you do with the millions, you know, the 10 million, 100 million and billion dollar, you know, net worth price points. And I feel like this is the prequel to that episode, the antithesis. What would you do with a million or less? Which is what I'm doing.
And me. So yeah, that's why Sam is not part of this episode.
Yeah. So I think this episode is going to be really good for most people who are listening to this podcast, whether you know you're starting out, you're saving, trying to get to your first million, or people that have, you know, just around a million, but they're not near the Sam Marks level or the, you know, the Warren Buffett level of how to live a good life within our means. And I will first caveat all this with saying the way not to do it is what I'm doing now, which is double paying rent. If you have a rental home or, you know, a home you own and you're not using it and you're just living somewhere else, you're just double paying, and that doesn't work that way. So we're talking more about relocating, living somewhere, you know, for a year at a time, you know, minimum 6 months at a time, but probably a year at a time, and not paying double rent, just actually living somewhere cheaper than the expensive cities like LA, San Francisco, New York, London, you know, Sydney, Melbourne, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. And Johnny, why don't you take the listeners back to a, quick review in case anybody's new to the show about where you started, in what city and where you've kind of primarily lived in the last 10 years or so.
Yeah. The biggest chunk was basically in Thailand, in Chiang Mai, Thailand for 8 years. That's where I went from having $1,000 in the bank to being very close to my first, my only, well, million.
It's coming back. Former, it's coming back. I feel it, Johnny.
Former million. So the way I did that was I lived as cheaply as possible in this mountain town called Chiang Mai, Thailand, which is actually a really cool place if anyone's ever been, you know, been there. And I just bootstrapped. I lived off of $600 a month in the beginning, built my business. And even when I started making good money, like a Western salary, I still lived cheaply. I still lived for about $1,000 a month, all the way until, you know, the very end of this journey where I had over $250,000 in the bank. I was making 20 grand a month and I was still living for $1,500 a month. So the rest of it, you know, 80% of it was going into investments, saving up so I can hit that net worth goal of $1 million.
That's totally smart. And I think there's a lot of people in our audience can relate to that. So I know, especially since COVID happened, a lot of people were able to move their jobs remotely, work from essentially anywhere with an internet connection. And there's the possibilities outside the US are endless. And a lot of these countries are starting to figure this out now. And they're actually catering programs specifically for people like this. So I don't know, Johnny, what's kind of maybe been on the radar? Are there any cities out there that you've seen or countries that you've seen that have especially started to really cater to these type of people?
Yeah, I would say the most popular one is probably in Portugal, Lisbon for sure, but also the smaller cities or even the beach cities in Portugal. South of Spain is actually surprisingly cheap. Barcelona, where Sam lives, is quite pricey, but the Canary Islands, you know, the Malaga, you know, a lot of beautiful places, which, you know, quite honestly, I like better than Barcelona. You can live for way less than $2,000 a month. But Tbilisi in Georgia, here in Athens, Prague, absolutely beautiful.
I love Prague. Prague is great.
So, yeah. You know, anywhere in Poland, you know, Krakow, and most places in Mexico, there's a ton of places. outside of the U.S. and even, you know, maybe some smaller towns in the U.S. That's not really my focus, because, you know, there's some things that are just always going to be expensive in the U.S., you know, regardless of where you are, and you don't get the tax breaks. But outside of the U.S., there are so many options. And if you are an American, we basically get $115 a year tax credit by being outside of the U.S. for 11 months of the year. If you're not American, you get a similar tax credit for being out of your country for just 6 months of the year. So it's a great way to double dip. We did an episode on that. But the actual savings in cost of living alone, it well makes, you know, it quadruples your ability to save and live a good life.
Yeah, totally. I'm sure if you guys have listened to the show before, Sam and Johnny like to give me crap about living in Los Angeles. I essentially still need to live in at least a large city because a lot of my income is essentially based on me being here. I do have part of my income still being remotely, and which I could probably move to a cheaper city and survive off that. But for one, I mean, I like Los Angeles, but I think if you guys are kind of getting to that point where you're like, why am I paying so much and I don't even really like where I live, then I think this episode would be for you, because Johnny and I are going to go over what our expenses are for the main categories to really survive between Los Angeles, and then Johnny's going to compare it to his lifestyle in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would also say that if you are working just to work and you're not really seeing your net worth grow, and especially if you're not happy, then definitely don't stay where you are, because, you know, if you're, you know, if you're slaving away, but you can see money topping up in your account every month, you know, then yeah, it makes sense to be in an expensive place that, you know, you're working your butt off. But, you know, if you're not enjoying it, you might as well be somewhere nice and comfortable and watch your money stay the same.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And you know what? I like the thought that these people that are really nervous about leaving the country and being far away from family and friends and whatever it may be, something like a Portugal or Mexico, if you're in the U.S., it's such an easy flight to get back. I mean, I can fly to Mexico, mm-hmm. pretty much anywhere to Mexico for $200 and be there in 3 hours right now. So the possibilities of, you know, getting back home and seeing friends and family and all that, it's not like the difficult task it used to be back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I personally like, you know, Asia and Europe for other reasons, you know, culture, food, weather, things like that. But also because there are so many other places that you can go to on vacation from, you know, from wherever you're based for super cheap. The problem with being in Mexico or in South America is, you know, flights, you know, really to other countries or anywhere else, even if it's not that far away, they're pretty hard to come by and they're pretty expensive. What I really like about living in Europe, for example, is you have all these low-cost carriers, Ryanair, Wizz Air, EasyJet, that take you directly to another country or even, you know, by train for, you know, $30, $40.
And yeah, I took a couple of those flights. They were like better than the best US airlines, honestly, because and the train, let's not discount the train. If any of you guys have never been on these high speed trains or just how efficient they are in Europe, so awesome. I can't believe that the US does not have a high speed rail network at all.
Yeah. So it's amazing. So like, you know, if I wanted, you know, to go to Oktoberfest, you know, from, you know, really any other country in Europe, it would be a quarter of the cost, because you can just, you know, pop over by train, by bus, you know, or cheap flight. And then you don't feel like you have to stay for 7 nights because, you know, such a long trip. You can go, you literally go there for 2-3 days and then go back.
Yeah, I love that idea. All right. So, Johnny, let's do this. Let's take a super quick break. We'll hear from our sponsor. And then when we get back, we'll compare our expenses.
All right.
This week's sponsor of Invest Like a Boss is Indeed.com. When you're hiring for your business, you usually got to make a choice. Do you hire fast or do you hire well? But what if you wanted to do both? Then you need Indeed. Indeed helps you find top talent fast with their suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed's Instant Match, virtual interviews, and the tool I'm going to tell you about right now, screenings and assessments. Indeed helps star applicants shine before the interview with over 135 graded assessment tests they can take, anything from cooking to coding. And these assessments help take the stress out of the interview process. Candidates get to show their skills before the interview so you can dive deeper into talking about what's important to you. So join the over 3 million businesses worldwide using Indeed to hire great talent fast. Indeed knows when you're growing your own business, you have to make every dollar count. That's why with Indeed, you only pay for quality applications that match your must-have job requirements. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Visit Indeed.com/iLab to start hiring now. Just go to Indeed.com/iLab. That's Indeed.com/ILAB. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. So first, we got to talk about the biggest fixed expense, which is always going to be housing. How much do you pay for rent now, Derek?
You're going to see my number, Johnny, and I think you're going to think it's really expensive. But I'm here to tell you that in the current state of things, I'm getting a very good deal. I am in Los Angeles, the West Side, and Venice Beach. If you're not familiar with Los Angeles, it's the average house in my neighborhood goes for about $2.1 million. So I am in a studio apartment. It's about 400 square feet or so, and I can be on the sand with my toes in the sand in about 15 seconds or so. I don't have a view, but I'm about as close as you can get to the water. I am paying $1,866 a month.
$1,866. You know, I can see why it costs that for being in that location. It's still ridiculous to me to pay $1,800 a month for a studio, but I understand. Like, I've been to Venice. I like it. It's a very cool place. And the thought of that being a deal, because what would it go for normally, you think?
So the new ones in my building, when people move out, she's asking between like 21 and 23.
Ouch. Yeah. So at 1800, I can see why you live there. If you were paying $2,300 a month, I'd be like, you're insane.
I'd seriously have to consider not living here if it was that high, I think.
Yeah, but that's just what it costs. I mean, average one bedroom rental in LA, or in a lot of big cities, is over $2,000 a month. And the fact that that money is kind of just going down the drain, it's insane, because pre-tax, someone has to be making $2,500 or $3,000 a month just to pay for that. That's just, to me, it's probably half of what some people make.
Oh, if you're making $3,000 a month and you're paying that rent, you are hurting bad, I think. Yeah. Well, let's talk about yours, Johnny. Explain your living situation and how much it's costing you.
Yeah. So for housing, but also kind of for everything we're going to talk about today, I'm just going to base it off of if I was actually living in one of those places I mentioned, above earlier, whether it's Chiang Mai or Krakow or Lisbon, Tbilisi, Athens or Kyiv, assuming I didn't own a place. If you sign a 1 year lease, then you can get a decent place for $500 a month. That's going to be walkable, in the city center. You're not going to be directly on the beach. If you wanted that equivalent, I would say you can get it for, $800. So it's still much cheaper.
I missed three-digit rent.
Yeah. So, and one kind of big benefit of a lot of these countries is when you rent a place, it actually comes with furniture. So you don't need to...
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that. A lot of the places in Europe do, yeah.
Yeah. And in Asia, too. So, like, for example, in Chiang Mai, I was looking just for fun. You can rent a place in a luxury condo. So everything's brand new. It'll come fully furnished, so you get like a nice TV, nice, nice couch, nice furnishing, full kitchen, probably maybe even pots and pans sometimes, or, but at least you get like bedding, things like that. And for $500 a month, you can live in a place that has a, security at the front door, a swimming pool, a gym, a sauna, and be walking distance to all the cool stuff. So you don't, even need a car, which we're going to talk about a little bit later.
Yeah. And then what about utilities? You got to pay all that stuff there. So like here in the US, you usually have like a gas and electric bill. I actually don't have any gas appliances, so I just have electricity. Keep in mind, I do live in a small place, but it is really cheap. It's about $25 a month just for that.
Yeah. So for that, it was hard to compare because everyone's lifestyle is a little bit different and the size of our places are different. So what I did was I looked up what is the average kilowatt per hour cost. Do you know what yours is in LA?
You know what? I always toss my bills after I pay them, so I don't. It would say on the bill, though. I can do a little Google search and see, but
I looked it up. In California, it ranges anywhere between 15 to 24 cents, so 21 cents on average. In places like in Mexico, it's 9 cents. In Kyiv, where I was living, it was 7 cents. So in general, it's much, much cheaper. I'll say maybe half the price for electricity or utilities in general. And if you're living in a smaller, more efficient place, like a lot of city center apartments are in places like Asia or Europe, you end up spending less anyways.
That actually surprises me a little bit because I thought that it might be like really cheap for us to generate electricity here in the US because we have a lot of energy resources. I'm going to guess that a lot of the extra money that we pay is built into like fees and taxes and things like that.
Yeah. And it is cheaper outside of California as well. But
shocking
in general. Yeah. You know, a lot of people kind of forget like California has a literal California tax on a lot of things. So just everything from, buying groceries to filling your car with gas to pay your electric bill is going to be more expensive. So one easy hack, if you need to stay in the US, is just to move, to Nevada, to Vegas or Florida or, really any of these places. But I would say utilities are usually cheaper in other countries, but it can vary. But the one thing that is actually cheaper in the US is the cost of gasoline.
That's true. A lot of people don't think about that. Let's touch on that in a minute because we're gonna drop that under transportation. I have one more thing under this that is always a constant battle in our podcasting journey is my lovely internet in my terrible infrastructure neighborhood. Mine cost me $40 a month, Johnny. How much does your blazing fast internet cost you?
So in Kyiv, we actually have some of the best Wi-Fi pretty much in the world. Chiang Mai was also very similar and very similar price as well. Countries like Poland also have really fast Wi-Fi. I pay $10.54 a month for it's gigabit, but in reality you get about 500 megabytes up and down through wireless.
That's amazing. So I just get terrible at home, and that's why I just started renting an office, which I'll fill in listeners on a future episode. But that one I got about 600 down and like 50 up, and I was so happy. I'd never seen internet that fast.
Yeah, and the funny thing is download speeds, I think obviously they matter, but anything over 50 is so fast that it almost doesn't matter what else there is. I just want to see sequential speeds. Like to me, it's just a sign of good quality is when, it's balanced when it's up and down. Because the Airbnb I'm staying now in Athens, the download speed's pretty good. I think it's maybe 20 megabytes a second. The upload speed, less than one.
That's my internet we're on right now, Johnny. it's one to two at the most.
And it it just really pisses me off. I countries that even allow that, I think somebody got paid off at Telcom because they promised a 20 megabyte second speed or 30, whatever it is, and then they rip people off on the back end on the upload and just kind of hoping people wouldn't notice, because most people aren't informed enough to really understand, when they see something advertised as 100 megabyte a second internet, they assume it's gonna
they
work.
Don't even check it. Yeah,
they'll check it, but in fine print you get one.
I literally had to move to get internet because my we do a lot of audio video stuff, and I can't I can't wait 8 hours to upload a YouTube video and then have it pause every 10 minutes because the internet was crashed. So it's just unusable.
Yeah. The good news is actually the place I rented here in Athens, they got a notice saying that they're being upgraded to fiber this week. So I'm just kind of waiting for that. But right now it literally takes me 8 hours to upload a YouTube video. So I have to let it kind of run overnight. It's ridiculous.
Well, you're talking about Airbnb. We stay in a lot of Airbnbs. I took my neighborhood specifically. Obviously, I said it's definitely a more expensive neighborhood in Los Angeles. But Johnny, if I just checked, when did I send this to you? Like 2 days ago? This was a weekday in Venice, California. How much do you think one night of an Airbnb costs?
I don't know. California is ridiculous. But like you would think you'd be able to get something for $150 a night.
This is the average price now I'm taking. The average price for a single Airbnb in Venice Beach is $277 a night.
To me, it's so ridiculous because there's people that live in countries where they make that in a month.
Right?
And the fact that someone is spending that to stay somewhere for one night, It's like almost insulting. Like imagine you speaking to someone who's, you know, a laying concrete, you know, on the freeway in, you know, XYZ country, and he makes $277 a month to feed his family of four, and you're like, oh yeah, I wasted that on a rental
one night, you know, 24 hours,
and I didn't even spend any time there, yeah.
Oh, it's sad, but it is what it is. I mean, I don't know. That's why I'm like, how can I cash in on this? People are paying $300 a night to stay here.
If I was you, I would make my place kind of renter, you know, friendly. You know, keep everything in like locked up, keep it minimalist, whatever. I would always list it for $277 a night, and just, you know, or $300 a night, something, you know, ridiculously high. And if someone books it, I would just go crash with a friend for a few days, or I'll go camping, or I'll go hang out somewhere.
There's specifically a no Airbnb clause in my lease, but my landlord's like 97 years old, and I'm sure I could probably get away with it for a while. But I do have a couple of nosy neighbors in here too that like to kind of rat out people.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. I mean, honestly, that's another reason why I don't want to live in the US is you get those, you know, nosy neighbors, the Karens, who feel like your business is their business. While in other countries, as long as you're not harming anyone, no one cares what you do. You can literally do whatever you want, and they know it's not their business to say anything, and they can't say anything or do anything if you're not, you know, physically harming someone.
Yeah, that's a good point. It does get kind of annoying. I mean, honestly, in California, at least, there's a lot of like renter protections, so you could really fight a lot of that stuff, but there's always those little landlords that want to do their thing.
Yeah. But yeah, in general, the places that I mentioned, you can get a rental for, you know, between $50 and $80 a night for a decent place. You know, I think that's what a hotel or apartment should cost per night. I don't think any place should charge more than $100 a night kind of justifiably. You know, that's just like a 5-star resort or something, because that's $3,000 a month. And if you're, you know, if you're making $3,000 a month renting out a studio apartment, like you're making money.
Yeah, totally agree with that. I feel like just in the last like 6 months or so, it's just got exacerbated so much too. Like I want to say like pre-COVID, you could have got a pretty nice place over here for like $150 a night. It's gone that crazy since.
Yeah. Well, speaking of craziness, I see on your list you have insurance, which is mandatory in the US. I think for renters, it's usually pretty cheap. Homeowners insurance a little bit more. But then if you live in a place, you know, where there's earthquakes or floods or fires, then it ends up being a bit costly.
Yeah, I unfortunately don't have earthquake insurance. If I owned, I think I definitely would. I just have a basic renter's insurance policy that covers, you know, enough to replace furniture, computers, stuff like that. And it's only $7 a month, but I've never had to actually use it. So you never know what kind of hassle you're going to run into there. But yeah, just $7 a month. Pretty simple.
I've always felt that renter's insurance was underpriced in the US or in California, because I remember being shocked how cheap it was as well. I had never used it. So maybe, you know, that's how they get you. So no one ever makes a claim, but it does seem very cheap for it covering all your stuff.
Yeah, especially when you hear about all the home break-ins and things that have happened. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, anytime I've ever had to deal with insurance, it's always some kind of fight. So who knows? It could be impossible to ever cash in on that. But at $7 a month, you got to think it's many, many years of paying before it pays out, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let us know in the Boss Lounge and in our Facebook group if you've ever had to make a claim on renter's insurance and how that process was. Because, you know, it sounds like a great deal. And unfortunately, in most other countries, we don't really have these type of insurance policies. You know, on one hand, it's good where none of it's mandatory, but on the other hand, you know, like there's not even Apple Care in other countries outside of the US in general. So you are kind of just stuck, you know, you kind of just don't buy anything that you can't afford to replace.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of getting insurance that you don't need, but when it's something that cheap, and think of if you walked in your apartment was just broken into and everything was robbed, just how horrible feeling that would be. I've had my car broken into before and like windows smashed and they stole a backpack, and it's just the invasive of privacy and your space, and then the fact that you're on the hook for that bill afterwards just sounds awful.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, as long as they're not going through my fridge and eating all my food, because groceries can get pricey, right?
Well, you and I love to eat a lot of food. I've traveled with you. We both eat a lot. My grocery bill, I think, is very high for a single person, but I like to eat a lot at home. I cook a lot, and I eat healthy, which unfortunately, eating healthy means you have to spend more money, which sucks, because if you just want to eat junk food all day, you can live for really cheap. My monthly grocery bill, I went through my credit card last statement. I spent $805 at the grocery store.
Wow.
That was more than the rent you suggested.
Yeah. That sounds a little bit crazy. Let me actually check my Apple Card. So I think I put my all my months, spending on my Apple Card last month.
Mm-hmm.
Food and drinks. And to be fair, this is for two people, and I was in like London for half of it.
All right, you should be somewhere in my neighborhood.
I spent $1,437.
Ooh, Johnny balling out over there.
Yeah, but I mean, that was very different, because I was literally feeding. Actually, I was feeding more than two people, because I was also living with a family. For a bit, my friends, they're a couple, and then they have a baby, and I was cooking for them a lot. And since I was staying with them for free, I paid for groceries. So that really isn't a normal month. You know, going out, drinking at, you know, bars, eating out every single meal in Paris and in London. So I took a look to see how I can actually calculate this, because it's, you know, it's hard to put a number on, you know, a food or grocery bill, because everyone's so different.
Yeah.
So what I did was I used a website called Numbro. Have you heard of them?
I haven't. Is it spelled out for me so I can check it out?
Numbero. They are a cost of living kind of website. It looks really, really old. It's used for
my antivirus just said you probably shouldn't go here.
Numbeo. So they are very, very popular to use with like businesses that relocate their staff.
Oh, here we go. I think you spelled it wrong the first time. I got it now, though. Okay. I'm watching it. Anybody else wants to follow along? Numbeo.com.
And actually, a great way to do it is if you go under cost of living comparison, cost of living, and then cost of living comparison, mm-hmm. Type in Los Angeles, and then type in like Chiang Mai or something, and you can see the or Lisbon, or really just choose one of the countries I mentioned, the cities I mentioned, and you can see what the price difference is.
Cool. I'm trying Lisbon versus LA.
Okay.
Ooh, it's a lot cheaper.
Yeah. So cool. Actually, it'll show kind of the total differences, you know, including rent or without including rent. But then what I really like is it breaks down things like how much is a beer? You know, how much is a cappuccino? How much is a can of Coke? How much is a liter of milk? And you can see Lisbon is basically cheaper in almost every category.
Yeah, and these prices, I'm looking at the LA prices, they're actually pretty close to today. Yeah, I mean, I would say a couple are a little low, but they're pretty close on.
Yeah, and you know, we also have to remember that, you know, LA is a big county, so I'm sure somewhere in the East LA is cheaper than in Venice. But sure. Yeah, in general, the prices are pretty spot on.
This is very cool. So I just, full disclosure too, I checked out like every food and drink cost that I did. It was about $1,000 for the month. I think I only went out like once or twice that month. And like you said, every month kind of varies. But I think food and drinks is kind of one of those expenses you don't really think about because it's something you need and it's not like a big bill every month, like your rent. It's every day. So it's kind of little incremental sections. But when you add them all up, it adds up to like one of your biggest expenses through the month.
Yeah, absolutely. But one thing I do like about living in these cheaper countries is it becomes possible to eat out every day and not have to cook.
Right.
And I think if, you know, when you live in an expensive place, you have no other option. Like, you know, if you're living in the UK, like, you know, especially London, you literally can't afford to eat out every day. You know, if you live in Sweden or Norway, like, it's so expensive to go out to eat. It becomes a treat or a luxury that you do, you know, even once a month in some, you know, for some people, you know, and, you know, even in your situation, you only ate out two times last month.
Yeah. And it was still, you know, $1,000 for my food. Yeah.
You know, and meanwhile, I'm eating out, you know, probably two meals a day. Like I like going out and eating outside, you know, like sometimes I'll have breakfast at home, but I like going to dinners. I like meeting friends. I like going, you know, sitting on, you know, kind of the pedestrian walkways or, you know, somewhere in the nice view and just kind of chilling out for dinner, you know, and the fact that I'm able to do that, you know, for less money than it costs for people to cook, you know, from what they bought at takeaway at like at Walmart or Whole Foods, what do you call the hot food bar? It's ridiculous to me that people literally spend more money taking away food from a supermarket than I do sitting somewhere, you know, with a great view.
I see it every single day. It's crazy. And I, unfortunately, what sucks is a lot of times if I'm going to go out and meet friends, it's like, let's just grab drinks. You know, I'll eat at home and then I'll meet you later and we'll grab drinks just because it's so expensive just to eat.
Well, okay. So speaking of drinks, how much do you pay to grab drinks?
So if the average price, I would say if you're getting a beer, it's going to be like $8 to $12 per beer. If you're getting a cocktail, a basic cocktail is between $10 and $15. If you want one of those fancy ones that the bartender makes in front of you, probably $15 to $20. So, I mean, I would say anywhere from $8 to $20 per drink, depending on what you're drinking.
So all the places that I mentioned, you can get a beer at a bar or at a restaurant for $2.
Oh, I miss those days. That was like Wisconsin growing up.
Yeah. And you can get a craft beer for like $3. Like from talking about like London or something, you know, all the places I mentioned, I will go and have a craft beer, just like a lager or something, for $1, $1.50 at any bar, any restaurant. And if I want like a nice craft beer, $2, maybe $3, I'll have, you know, something amazing, like a nice IPA or something.
So I think I was at a place a couple of weeks ago and I was looking at the menu and they have the drink prices and stuff. First time I think ever I saw just a regular Budweiser, a plain old Budweiser with a 2-digit price. It was $10 for a Budweiser.
That better come in a bucket and with three friends.
Like the Oktoberfest size.
Yeah. Oh. But okay, so actually, I remember in Kyiv, there's a place right around actually not just one place. There's like two or three places corner from me that I pass when I go home. You know, it's like on the way back from the metro, right off the main street, and this is right in the city center at like a cool, trendy bar and restaurants, and they have this mango IPA that is so good. that I just end up, going there, just stopping by there a couple of days a week.
Just to get one?
Yeah. And I think it was, I want to say 75 hryvnia, which is like $2.
Yeah. A little bit over two, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so ridiculous that I'm able to sit at a bar, in the city center, like surrounded by cool people, and pay $2 for one of the best tasting beers I've had.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. And you get a view and all that. Yeah. You're paying for it here. You have two, three drinks. You're paying $30-$40 here. Easy.
Yeah.
And then tip on top of that too,
Oh yeah.
I mean, some countries, we should talk about that since we're on the food subject. The US standard is 15-20%. Even if I have the worst service ever, I'm probably still given 20%. I know there's some people that just don't even tip. You can do that in the US if you're not from the US.
No,
I wouldn't suggest it. Yeah.
I think in the US you can't. Literally you cannot. And even if you start tipping less than 18%, people get mad at you. Like,
yeah.
What pisses me off the most is when you pay by the credit card and they give you those three options. Do you want to tip 18%, 22%, or 25%?
It's wild.
I'm like, are you joking me? At least give me the option to tip 15.
Yeah. The minimum has just crept up on those little machines and they bury where to change the tip. And if you do that, the server is like, oh, they're changing the tip on me.
Yeah. You just feel like an asshole, Yep. It's high pressure. It's so uncomfortable. I don't like it at all. What I love about Europe and most of Asia is, first off, taxes included. They call it VAT or whatever. And tipping in a lot of countries, most countries, it's not expected at all, especially at bars.
And I like the VAT tax too, because if something says it's $10, it's $10. Here it's $10 plus 10% tax.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess we don't use cash anymore, but when you do, it's so much easier to see something that's 10 euros and you give them 10 euros versus, you give them a 20 and you get back, €9 and, $9 and 27 cents back.
Yeah. It's weird, walking around with change and coins and stuff.
Yeah. But it's also it's a trick to make everything in the US seem cheaper. We even lie to ourselves. We're like, oh yeah, that TV is only $1,999.99. It's less than $2,000. I should buy it. But in reality, it's $2,200.
Yep. You don't even think about it. It's just on top of whatever price. And tax here in Los Angeles. Well, actually, let me take Santa Monica next to me. It's a town that's right next to me. I can walk over there. The city of LA, I believe, is 9.5% tax. Santa Monica is 10.1.
Mm. Yeah. And the worst thing is you don't really feel like you can get anything for it.
No. Yeah, we have terrible streets. We have homeless everywhere. It's like, where is this money going?
Yeah, bad public transport. You don't feel like you're getting the value added.
Not at all.
You just have tax.
Let me touch on one more food thing before we go, because this is, you can find in almost every country, and you were extremely angry when they closed their doors when Russia struck. Let's talk McDonald's, Johnny.
Okay.
I haven't been to McDonald's in probably 3 years, and I think I just went to get some fries. So I was like, oh, I gotta have some of those fries. But I don't really eat McDonald's. I was shocked to find out how much just a single Big Mac costs at McDonald's now. It's not cheap to eat at McDonald's. This is a Big Mac, no fries, no drink, just the sandwich. $6.47.
I remember you used to be able to get the meal for less than that.
Yeah. And you just have a dollar menu. Well, that no longer exists. If you want the full meal with fries and a drink, $11.18.
That is ridiculous. It's ridiculous to pay over $10 to eat at a fast food joint.
It's not real beef, as far as I know.
it's real beef. Right. But yeah, I don't know. Honestly, it almost just upsets me. it shouldn't be that much money, but they have to pay that because, and I guess we don't have to get into, why the US is so expensive, but especially California, but it's ridiculous. Like It's not affordable. I mean, can you imagine having, you know, a family of four people and spending $50 at McDonald's just to have a crappy lunch?
Yeah, you just want to, that's why you have kids too and you think about that. Like, you're going to McDonald's and you just paid $50.
Well, funny that you bring up McDonald's, because there is an actual economic term called the Big Mac Index. Have you heard of this?
I think it's something like McDonald's essentially drives prices for a lot of other items, right?
No, but what it is, it's the opposite of that, where a lot of items are dependent on, like, for example, what goes into a Big Mac? Bread, which is like wheat, mm-hmm. eggs, flour, you know, beef, you know, lettuce, tomatoes, so, and, you know, labor, rent, things like that. So what it is by comparing the cost of a Big Mac, you can kind of see what other things would cost, if that makes sense.
Okay, I gotcha. Yes, it's like a comparison tool.
Yeah, and, you know, because there's, you know, basically, there's Big Macs, I mean, there's McDonald's in, you know, all these countries, it's really easy to like have that be the one thing to compare. So I'm going to share my screen with you right now, and you can see how much a Big Mac costs in different countries. And you can kind of see that, you know, based on the Big Mac price, how expensive or overpriced those countries are.
This list. I can see it. It doesn't really surprise me. There's one kind of standout in there I didn't expect. In the for comparison, U.S. is number six, actually. We're not the top. It goes Switzerland is the most expensive, then Norway. This one surprises me. Uruguay is third. And then Sweden, Canada, U.S. Why do you think Uruguay is on there?
It probably has something to do with their currency being messed up, or like supply issues. It's probably not that price kind of like normally. Like, I'm sure if you went to Uruguay and you bought, you know, the equivalent of a fast food sandwich, it would be much cheaper in their local currency. But sometimes you get those kind of outliers there that kind of just show, you know, that there's kind of some kind of weird instability in that country, or their prices are messed up somehow.
Yeah. The rest of this pretty much adds up. You should share this with the show, and we'll put it on the site so you bosses can check it out at investlikeaboss.com.
Yeah. And if you go all the way down, I don't think I have the scrollability, but there are a lot of countries that are well below the cost of a Big Mac in the U.S. According to this list, the average price of a Big Mac in the U.S. is $5.15. While in, you know, somewhere like in Czech Republic, in Prague, it's $3.97. And that kind of just shows how much cheaper everything is in those countries, and not just the cost of a Big Mac.
Yeah, and that seems to be pretty spot on. That's about 30% or so. And compared to a lot of things we've talked about, I think we're in like the 30 to 50% range for everything.
Yeah. So every year it changes a little bit, but guess what country was the cheapest Big Mac for a long time, for many years running?
The cheapest. Well, I'm going to guess Ukraine, because it's
really,
it was. That's what, oh, wow.
Yeah. That was a big reason why I moved there, because the value that you
Johnny's looking at where to live based on the Big Mac index.
Yeah. No, I swear to God, I looked through the list and I scrolled down and I was like, okay, there are some countries that, yes, like things are cheap, but I wouldn't want to live there. And you know, I was basically looking through, and I was like, okay, what countries are kind of on this like this cheap list, but are places I would actually want to live?
That I think you found a good hack until Putin disrupted your plans.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, a lot of the ones that are cheap, you know, also have, you know, kind of political instability or other problems. But right now, do you want to try to guess what country has the cheapest Big Mac?
What country now?
And I'll give you a hint. Kind of like, I don't know if it was a few months ago, but definitely like a year ago, they had one of the most expensive Big Macs.
Oh, it's got to be then Russia, I guess.
Russia has jumped around a lot. Actually, well, Russia actually no longer has McDonald's. they were forced to finally get, you know, to sell.
Oh, I remember seeing that. Yeah.
So the McDonald's got taken over by a local chain called Kushna Tochna.
Oh, it which just means, rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah. It means yummy or, you know, like tasty, period.
Straight into the point.
Yeah. So Venezuela currently has the cheapest Big Mac.
They're kind of a mess too, but yeah.
Yeah, but I had heard...
They got the cows and they got good like beef down there. Well, that's Argentina, but I think they do.
That's Argentina. But so Venezuela, I heard for a while, had the world's most expensive Big Mac because it was just like everything was kind of messed up with the currency. But when things settle, you know, it makes sense. Second would be Romania, then South Africa, then like Jakarta, India, Egypt, Malaysia, you know, all kind of countries I don't really want to live in, but yeah. I can see why they're cheap.
Totally. That's a good little indicator there. And it does, you're right. It kind of correlates with all the other expenses we're seeing too. That's the order of the countries isn't too far off.
Yeah. And you know, there's a lot in the middle, you know, like Mexico or Thailand or Poland. I'm like, oh, actually, you know what? Yeah. I wouldn't mind paying half of, you know, the cost of a Big Mac, but still being a place I actually want to be.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Let's touch on, we got two more categories. I'm going to save our favorite one for last. That's transportation, cars, because we could go on that forever. Let's touch quickly on health. We talked about insurance earlier. This is the biggest insurance cost that I have. And it's mostly a US problem, but I pay $390 a month for my health insurance. And I'm going to tell you, it's not even like a great insurance.
You know, the biggest problem in the US is it's so unaffordable to go to a doctor straight out that you have to have insurance.
You have. It's not even an option.
I mean, you can like the knock on wood, but one of the reasons why I don't go back to the US is if when I'm there and something happens, I can literally go bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not uncommon to have $1 million medical bill if you get into a severe accident or something really bad happens to you in the US and you don't have insurance. So
I got a good example of that. If you want to know, Johnny. So yeah. 10 years ago, I had a triple fracture in my ankle and they said I might not even like walk correctly again. So I had to have surgery. I got 10 screws, three plates, two wires in there. Guess this was 10 years ago now, keep in mind, guess how much, from the time it happened to the time of recovery, how much that would have cost me had I not had insurance.
I can tell you that surgery in, somewhere with good hospitals, like in Thailand or Turkey, or, you know, you could probably pay cash for that for like $50,000.
So the surgery alone by itself, nothing else considered, was $300,000.
Oh,
and all said and done, everything else, you know, the boots and the casts and all that kind of stuff. It was over $500,000 if I didn't have insurance.
That's insane.
I would have had to file bankruptcy. I would have had no choice.
Yeah. So it's insane. So you have to pay $390 a month or you're screwed. And did you ever look up what your copay is?
I think my maximum out of pocket is like $5,000 or $6,000. So if something like that happens again, it's going to cost me that maximum amount. But the most out of pocket, I think, is like $6,000 plus $390. So yeah, about $10,000 in total for the year.
But what's crazy is a lot of times it sounds like, okay, you know, at $6,000 max isn't that bad, you know, especially if something's that catastrophic, like then I would happily pay that. But a lot of times the way that they have it is you pay the first $6,000, you know, like
it's such a money scam, I swear.
Yeah. And like, so even if like your entire medical bill was, you know, $7,000, they're only covering $1,000 of it. You're paying this first six.
Yeah. And I think if I just go to see a doctor, I have a regular appointment. It's like you walk up to the counter and they're like, well, $50, please. You know, and unless you pay that, you're not even seeing the doctor. And I'm like, well, what do I have insurance for?
Yeah. And meanwhile, for $50, you can actually just go and pay as a cash customer. My luckily only real experience at an emergency room was in South Africa, out of all places.
Ooh.
I was doing CrossFit, and
how I messed up my back. I hate CrossFit.
Yeah. CrossFit is the best until it's not.
Yep, that was another surgery I had to pay for. Thanks, CrossFit.
So I remember I tore a calf muscle doing CrossFit in Johannesburg, and I was in so much pain. Like, mm-hmm. I literally couldn't get off the floor. I had to, you know, they had to take me to the ER, and I remember paying, you know, when I had to pay, I paid cash. I didn't have insurance or anything, and I was like, oh man, I'm like this is gonna be crazy. You know, the doctor saw me, they put like a soft cast on. How much do you think that would cost in the US?
A torn calf muscle, you had to get a cast. That's a $10,000 bill.
I think I paid $130.
Oh my god, I can't even go to McDonald's for that, Johnny.
Yeah, and it might have been like it might have been 150, but like whatever it was so cheap that I didn't even. No, actually, you know what? I had insurance. I had travel insurance.
I wouldn't even bother. Yeah,
I didn't bother claiming it. It was so cheap. And the funny thing is, I actually got a email from the doctor a couple of months later saying that there was a mistake on my bill, and I called them back and I was like, oh man, like how much more do I owe?
Right.
And they said no, like we overcharged you.
That'll never happen in the US.
I know. I was shocked that they even called, and I told them to keep it. I said, like, whatever it is, just keep it.
Just give me a credit next time I'm there.
I said like literally just keep it as a tip. Like, I don't care. Like it was so cheap. And this is why I don't have insurance at all now. And it sounds, you know, to an American, it sounds insane, but things in most countries that I live in are so cheap out of pocket that it's just not worth spending, you know, what, $4,000 a year or $5,000 a year to insure against it. Because for $5,000, I can get 97% of the medical attention I would ever need anyways.
Yeah, and if you're in the US, it doesn't even make sense to risk it anyways, because now in the last, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, the US government actually charges you on your taxes if you don't have proof of insurance. And I think it's like a $3,000 bill. So you're either burning $3,000 and having zero insurance, or you're spending $5,000 and you have insurance. So don't even risk it. It's just like, you're just going to pay a huge tax bill and get no coverage. So it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, in the last, you know, 10 years alone that I've been out of the US, just in insurance savings, you know, it's probably been $50,000.
Oh yeah, easy, I bet. And that's, you know, that's assuming nothing happened.
Yeah. And it's money that I invested, and it's worth double that now because it's been over 7 years. So that's $100,000 in net worth that I have now for like literally doing nothing, just by not having insurance.
That's super crazy when you think about it. I'm glad I have coverage in case something happens, because I've had something catastrophic happen. But at the same time, I see how much it raises every year. It goes over 10% every year. And I'm like, well, minus this year when inflation has been big, I can't even imagine what it's going to be next year. But it's gone up over 10% every year when inflation was 1 or 2%. So I think a lot of people are going to be in a shock when they see their 2023 insurance bill coming up.
Yeah, it's another one of the reasons why I refuse to live in the US. Things like, you know, going to the pharmacy to get, you know, like antibiotics or some kind of medication that like, you know, exactly what you need. Like, it's just not possible in the US. It's like they don't allow it. But in Thailand or a lot of countries, you know, a pharmacist is usually trained pretty well, where they've been to some kind of, you know, not full on medical school, but, you know, they are trained, licensed, you know, pharmacists, and they will prescribe or give you over the counter medication, and you don't have to go and get an actual prescription.
Oh, it's such a pain. Just sometimes if you're using something that you've taken for years and you just need a refill, the doctor's like, no, I need you to come in, because they want to collect that tax, that bill.
Yeah. So yeah, I would say definitely health insurance and insurance in general is just, it's just so much less in other countries.
Totally. All right. We're running low on time, Johnny, but we got to touch on our favorite subject. Let's talk transportation.
Okay. In the US, you have to have a car. Like, you just have to have a car.
And minus a couple of cities, maybe New York, Chicago. But other than that, you need a car.
Yeah, like, absolutely. And even in those cities, you end up spending so much more on transportation anyways that, like, it's, you know, and rent that you're going to spend a lot. But, yeah, in the US, you need a car. Do you know what is the average cost of owning a car per year in the US when you factor in depreciation, cars, you know, like, you know, maintenance, you know, gas, insurance,
per year? I'm going to say stuff. At least 15 grand.
The average is 10 grand.
Okay.
You know, it depends on how nice your car is, how much you drive and things like that. But no. I don't know if that includes gas.
Yeah. I don't know. That sounds a little low, but I mean, I'm kind of strange because I drive a lot more than the average person, but still, that seems a little low, I think.
Yeah, because how much do you spend on gas per month?
So I spent last month. Now, keep in mind, I drive a extremely efficient car. I have a hybrid that gets over 40 miles to the gallon. I still spent $288 in gas. It's 10 bucks a day.
That's 3,500 bucks a year.
Yeah, just in gas, nothing else.
Wow. So, yeah, what I like about living in the countries that I choose or the cities I choose is I've never needed a car. And for the last, you know, 10 plus years, I haven't owned a car until, you know, very recently when I, you know, decided to get a deal on a Porsche Cayenne. Even then, I don't need the car and I hardly ever drive it. But I haven't needed to own a car for the last 10 plus years, which has saved me now. What would that be? Another 100 grand. So when people ask, 10, you know, like,
10, yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, how did I grow my net worth so quickly? It's because I wasn't paying for all these things like insurance, health insurance and car stuff. It's so cheap to get around in, you know, places like in Chiang Mai or in Kyiv or in Poland or, you know, really any of these countries that have good metro systems or, you know, walkable systems or an Uber is actually, you know, affordable, that you just don't need a car.
Yeah, totally. Let's talk about cars. I was going to use my situation I'm in right now. I've done a long-term rental. It's a really weird, complicated deal that I'm getting a really good deal on it in comparison. I don't want to touch on that because I want to touch on like an average person that would buy a car. So I can use this. A couple months ago, I actually went and test drove a car. I came very close to signing the papers and I decided it was just too much. It was kind of crazy how much cars are now. So I was actually lucky to get a car at sticker price for one, because that's like unheard of right now in the way that cars are going right now. This was a $39,000 car.
Okay.
So add tax, registration, all that fun stuff. And this was going to be I was thinking about paying it in cash or paying it off early. But in the meantime at the dealer, I was like, just give me five or six? I think it was 6 year loan price. Mm-hmm. So $40,000 car, Johnny, how much do you think the payment was every month on a 6 year loan? This was like 2.9% too, like a really low rate.
I don't know, but I just remember when I was looking at, you know, how cheap of a car I can get, I remember seeing, you know, this is a long time ago, but I remember seeing, you know, monthly payments for like, you know, $199 a month to get like a Hyundai or something. So I'm assuming it's going to be at least double that, if not triple nowadays.
Yeah, triple it. $670 a month for the car payment alone. Oh,
yeah. I mean, right there, assuming nothing breaks, you're paying $1,000 a month.
Yeah, that doesn't even include maintenance or anything like that. And then insurance on top of that, a call to get insurance. You know, if you have a loan, you obviously have to have full coverage, and you should anyways on a new car. That's an extra $200 a month.
Oh,
so we're at 870 right there.
My insurance per year in Kyiv, and you know, it's what do you call it? Liability only.
Yeah.
What do you think it costs per month or per year?
Well, I can tell you what it would be in the US. I'm going to assume liability only. It's a Porsche Cayenne, but it is older. So I'm going to say it's like probably $1,200 for the year.
It was $120 for the year.
What? No way. That's what, 30 bucks a month? I can't even do math. Yeah. Right now. No, it's like,
no.
Oh, yeah, like 100 a month. Or no, I'm sorry.
No. It's $12 a month.
$12. Yeah.
It's $10 a month. Yeah. It's ridiculously cheap. And here's the other part is I realized the reason why I couldn't afford to own a Porsche when I was in the US wasn't because of the cost of buying one, because actually I had a $10,000 Porsche Boxster when I lived in LA.
Yeah, honestly, you can find some deals on. People are surprised when they see like how much those higher end cars drop in value.
Yeah, but the reason why they drop so much so quickly in the US is the cost of repairs are so ridiculous.
Brutal.
That like you just can't afford to maintain it. So that Porsche Boxster I had for 4 months, and then I had a $4,000 repair bill when
Yikes.
I had an issue with my transmission. That I was just like, I can't afford to keep this car, so I had to get rid of it. Meanwhile, in other countries, labor is cheap, and you know, I don't know where they get these parts from, but they're also pretty cheap. So. Like it's actually affordable to have something like a Porsche Cayenne, and while in the US, it would be such a headache to own a used Porsche that I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, it's you really got to be careful on that. You need to budget like 50% of the purchase price on maintenance or something that's going to break on those cars for sure.
Yeah, so I would say cost of getting around, in other countries, it's like, I don't know, maybe like $40 a month or something on average. And that includes taking the metro whenever I want, you know, taking Ubers, you know, every other day. Like it's not expensive.
That's so crazy. So I actually took my last 10 Uber rides in LA. I had quite a few in other cities, but I took all my ones in LA for this purpose. And I averaged it out to the average price of an Uber, and I pay about $19 for every Uber ride I take.
I remember showing someone my Uber transactions when I was living in Kyiv, and prices have gone a little bit since because of the war in Russia and the gas prices. But I remember last year, I was almost annoyed on my transaction list because it was like 3-4 pages of Ubers. Because all of them are like $1.20, $1.50, $1.92 or something. Like my average ride was less than $2.
Yeah, I remember going there, and we took long Uber rides, and it was like the one I think we were in there for like 45 minutes. It was like $3. I'm like, what just happened? how can this guy even buy gas?
Yeah, like I never really understood it like as well. Like, you know, maybe, yeah. Like, and I remember we even took Uber Blacks for, you know, like $12 or something. It was like, it's so ridiculously cheap. In pretty much any other country besides the US that allows actual Uber, it's cheap. You know, places that have, you know, their own kind of official taxis. Like in Austria or, you know, London has a black cab, things like that. Those are really expensive. But in places that I live, you know, where they have Bolt or Uber or kind of the local equivalent, I would say between, you know, $2 and $4 is your average ride.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm a little bit jealous of that. Yeah. Let's touch on the last piece of transportation. Let's talk about gas. You touched on it earlier. That US is actually cheaper than a lot of countries. I think this is something a lot of people don't realize. We complain about gas prices all the time, but we're not doing too bad, honestly.
Aside from like Saudi Arabia or somewhere that, you know, is you know, a oil producing, you know, monopoly that subsidizes it, the US has the cheapest gas in the world. And the easy way to calculate it is when you see other countries, whatever their price is, just multiply it by 4 because everywhere else they sell by the liter and it's like 3.77 or something liters per gallon. So when people in the US complain that gas is, you know, let's say, actually, what is it now? Is it still $5?
So I just pulled up the chart. This is per gallon across the world. US is currently at $4.09. Guess what the average in LA is, since we're talking about maybe even just moving through the United States to find somewhere cheaper. Currently in Los Angeles, it's $6.10 a gallon.
Oh my God. It's so ridiculous. That's $2 more per gallon than the average, other states.
Yeah. Yep.
That's so stupid, right?
crazy. So, I do have the calculations though. If you want to throw out a couple countries, I can search. But you're right though. When people see, I don't know, the gas prices in some other country, and they're like, oh, see, it's only a dollar or something there. It's like you're not thinking it's per liter, not per gallon.
Yeah. Yeah. So in other countries, you know, I would say it's always a bit more. Like I was probably paying between $8 to $10 a gallon in, like, you know, even in Ukraine during the peak. And
looks like Ukraine settled down now. They're about a dollar more than US, 507 right now.
Okay. Yeah, that's not bad at all. But the big difference though between the US and other countries, and the reason why you end up spending less in other countries, is first, the cars everywhere else are much more gas efficient. Like, nobody's driving, you know, these giant SUVs everywhere.
So much pushback now in the US too. These people that are like anti-electric. It's kind of like the political parties. You're either very left or very right. You're either buying a Tesla or you're buying like a Ford Raptor that gets 6 miles to the gallon.
Yeah. I mean, I'm being extremely hypocritical because my V8 Porsche Cayenne gets terrible.
That's probably doesn't get the best.
Yeah. But I literally don't drive it anywhere. Like, I would take it out like once or twice a week. And normally I'm not going very far. Like, I'm going like, you know, a 10, 15 minute drive away, like, you know, really just a few miles away. So that's the big difference. Is in the US, distances are really far and it's a daily commute. While in places I live, it's optional to have a car. So you don't really ever need it. And when you do use it, you're not going very far.
And you know what other thing I noticed about Kyiv, and I'm not sure about too many other cities where this is the case, you usually didn't look like you had to pay to park.
I don't know. Actually, in Kyiv, you technically need to pay to park. I didn't really discover that until I actually owned a car. But yeah, in a lot of places, like it's definitely, even if you have to pay, it's nowhere as much as parking in California.
Yeah. This is crazy, Johnny. I'm looking at this gas chart. What do you suppose, who has the most expensive gas in the world? I'll give you a hint. It's a very expensive place to live. It's probably one of the most expensive. Their gas is almost double the second highest on the list.
You know, I think I know. And then actually, ironically, they, I think, produce a lot of gas. Is it Norway?
Norway is fourth on the list. That's at $8.20 a gallon.
Okay.
Hong Kong.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I see that.
$11.14.
Yeah. But they don't want you driving. And the thing about Hong Kong is you just literally don't need a car because,
yeah,
you know, their subway system is so good and you can walk so many places. It's just such a shame that in the US, you can't get a job if you don't have a car. Like, unless you just happen to live in San Francisco or New York and work downtown and live near a line, like, you know, 99%, probably 99.9% of Americans, if you don't have a car, you can't get to work. And you're spending, you know, like an hour a day commuting on average. And that's money that you're just throwing away, sitting, burning gas. Like, you know, nobody likes commuting. You know, it's not a fun drive. It's like, it's one of the biggest wastes in the world. I probably saved thousands of hours of not commuting these last 10 years, because even if I went to an office to work, I would walk there and it'd be an enjoyable walk, you know, versus, you know, dreading my life being in traffic, getting pissed off in the morning.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it's kind of like a societal thing too, where if you don't have a car and you tell someone you don't have a car, they're not going to want to hang out with you. They're like, that person's a loser. They don't even have a car. Yeah, it's like, it's a weird societal placement thing in the US too.
Yeah. So I don't know, like, as much as I've always been a car guy and I really like cars, like, financially, I'm so happy that I didn't live in the US and I didn't own a car for so many years, because it's so easy to get tied back into it. Speaking of cars, this is kind of a bonus for the end of the episode. If I lived in the US, guess what car I would be so tempted to put a deposit down on right now? Something that is just coming out this year.
I think I saw you post this. Is it the new Lotus?
Yes.
Those are nice. I heard they're having production problems, but yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. But it's an incredible supercar that you can get for less than 100 grand. You know, it would be so easy for me to justify saying, well, you know, any other car is going to cost 50 grand anyways. You know, I might as well pay double and get something that, you know, I've always, you know, like kind of dreamed over. But by the time I factor in, you know, maintenance or, you know, things breaking, depreciation, the cost of it, I literally could not afford it if I lived in the US and had high expenses. So it's something nice to dream about, but yeah, I think if I lived in the US, I would have to have a car, and then I feel like I would want two, you know, a fun car than a community.
See, I wanted to meet US Johnny. Every time I hear about US Johnny, he's got cool cars, he's blowing money. Where'd this guy go?
Well, that guy was broke, so I'm glad that he had it. But yeah, it's even though nowadays I am, you know, kind of going back towards, you know, owning stuff again and living like in a bigger, you know, in nicer, bigger apartments and, you know, kind of being more, you know, US westernized again. I'm so happy. I'm like, not for a second do I regret, you know, leaving in 2008 and living abroad while I built and saved up $1 million, because there's zero chance I would have done that in the US.
Yeah, very well said. I think that's a good way to end this episode too. It might be eye-opening for some of you bosses out there. If you've been considering this, or maybe you recently did this when the pandemic hit and it was a good time to get out, let us know. We'll post in the Boss Lounge where you went, what your experiences have been so far in that city or country. It'd be really interesting to hear where you guys are located out there.
Yeah, and if you guys need any kind of push to go to one of these places, go to that website we just talked about. We'll put in the show notes. Numbero. Don't put in whatever porn site Derek typed in by accident, but Numbero, it's so eye-opening to see how much things actually cost. And like, these are real numbers too. They're not some like made-up list some nomad, you know, wrote, but these are actual like real numbers.
Yeah, pretty cool comparison there. I'll also put the gas price chart on there too, so you guys can get an idea of how much we actually are saving a little bit of money in the US on one thing. One piece of business, Johnny, we got to talk about. Have you been scoping out Patreon lately? Because I'm proud of all three of us. We've been putting a lot of content in there lately.
Yeah. You know, I think we just kind of like we go through these phases where, you know, we kind of get busy. We kind of forget about it for a while. And then once we start posting and people start, you know, we start getting the community going, you know, posting comments and replies. It like we really like it. It's a place that we can share things, you know. It's the only place Sam shares his exact numbers, you know, and it's like it's nice.
Yeah, tons of good content. If you didn't check out Sam and Johnny's full quarterly update, we only put about half of it out to the public, and then they got some really cool stuff. Sam has some cool stories about Tajikistan, which I'm sure we're going to hear more about in the future. Sam also just posted a video with former guests Kevin Shea and Tang from Art of FX. That's a Patreon exclusive too, if you guys want to see what they're up to. And my favorite thing to do, we do these about once a quarter. Coming up November 20th, as long as you sign up for our Patreon at investlikeaboss.com, click become a Patreon. If you get in before November 20th, you will be invited to our mastermind call coming up. Johnny, why don't you tell them what happens on a mastermind?
Well, other places will bring you into this, like, you know, this small group, and they will charge you $10,000 to share their thoughts. We charge $5, and it's just kind of a it's almost like a token of appreciation. And so like it's like a symbolic gesture just to kind of keep out the you know, the people who don't want to, you know, kind of give anything back. But it's a way to really just have the cool people who we know, you know, or invest in the show, that appreciate the show. And we talk very openly. It's like an hour long where it's completely interactive. It's like, imagine being like in a virtual, you know, like event where everybody has time on the mic. We split into small groups and we share what's been working, what we're investing in, and what our future plans are.
Yeah, I'm totally looking forward to that. Lots of things going on this quarter too. And I can't wait to see what you guys have been up to. Mine's definitely changed. I know yours has changed, Johnny, with moving around. Sam's got some new business ventures. So lots of cool updates are going to happen on that call. Once again, it's November 20th. It's a Sunday, so we try to do them on the weekends, so most of you aren't working. Investlikeaboss.com. Click become a Patreon. I think that's all I got, Johnny.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, because this was a ton of fun talking about it. And I'll see you guys hopefully on that call.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.